Recording Satsang Session 13 June 1985.
We are now in Canto 4, one of the climactic cantos in the epic titled The Vision and the Boon. The vision that is vouchsafed to Ashwapati, representative of humanity, and the boon given by the divine creatrix. As he is waiting, then suddenly there rose a sacred stir. Mark the word sacred. It is not a sensational or vital stir that agitates the atmosphere, but something holy, something sacred. Amid the lifeless silence of the void, in a solitude and an immensity, a sound came, quivering like a loud footfall, heard in the listening spaces of the soul. In that silence of the void around, in the solitude of his soul and the immensity of the infinity around, a sound comes, and it is vibrating like a loud footfall. A loud footfall, that is a footfall which is hoped for, which is prayed for, which is looked for, and evokes love. That is, the footfall holds so much in it that it evokes a response of love. That is, it is a familiar footfall, known earlier, and that is why it brings all the memories. A loud footfall heard in the listening spaces of the soul, not heard by the physical ear or by the hearing sense, but in the spaces of the soul which are listening. That is, the soul may look to us as if it is confined within the body, but actually the soul is larger than the body and it dwells in a sky of its own. The Upanishads describe it as Dharakasha, the sky of the heart, which is identical with the sky of the universe. And in these spaces of the soul, which are tuned to this footfall, a sound arrives, a touch perturbed his fibers with delight. Not only is the footfall heard, but even the fibers of his being subtle being naturally, are perturbed, moved, shaken by a touch. That is, it is not only a word, but also a spiritual touch which sets him vibrating. An influence had approached the mortal range. All this was a result of some influence coming near the reach of the mortal reach. That is, it has come down, it has stooped low to come within the range of the mortal's reach. A boundless heart was near his longing heart. His aspiring, intense heart feels itself near to a boundless heart. A mystic form enveloped his earthly shape, his whole body. Earthly shape, to emphasize that it includes the material frame, is enveloped by a mystic form, a form that cannot be analyzed, that cannot be explained in terms of reason. All utter contact broke from silence seen. All along he is living in utter silence. Silence of mind, silence of emotions, silence of sensations. There is, as it were, a seal of silence around him. But at her contact, the seal breaks. Spirit and body thrilled, identified. His body and his spirit feel an identity. And there is a thrill. Linked in the grasp of an unspoken joy, both the body and the spirit are linked in the hold of an unexpressed joy. Mind, members, life were merged in ecstasy. There is a flood of ecstasy which overwhelms his mind, his life, and all his members. Intoxicated as with nectarous rain, his nature's passioning stretches flow to her, flashing with lightnings, mad with luminous wine. His nature's passioning stretches, which are heaving with passion for union with the Divine Mother, stretches, extensions, they flow to her, and they flow with verve and force, because they are, as it were, intoxicated with the rain of nectar, flashing with lightnings. These passioning stretches, as they move towards her, they are punctuated with lightnings. and merge with luminous wine. All was a limitless sea that heaved to the moon. You know, on the full moon day, how the sea heaves to the sight of the moon. So here he says, it is a limitless sea. Our earthly sea is limited by shores. But here, it is a limitless sea. His entire being heaves to the moon of her approach, a divinizing stream possessed his veins. The stream of nectar, the conscious force that flows through his veins, has an effect of transformation, of divinizing his veins. His body's cells awoke to spirit sense. That is, even the spirit has a sense. Just as we have physical senses, vital senses, mental senses, the spirit also has its subtle sense. And the cells in his body awoke to that sense of the spirit, and each nerve became a burning thread of joy. Each nerve begins to vibrate with joy, which is so intense, which is so acute, that it feels like burning. Tissue and flesh partook beatitude. Normally they are inert, given to emotional upsets, but here they partake of beatitude, alight. Now what about the subconscious? He says, the dun means the gray, unplumbed subconscious caves. The subconscious caves are so deep that one cannot plumb them and measure them. And these gray, dull subconscious caves are lighted up in her presence. Thrilled with the prescience of a longed for tread. Her tread, her footfalls have been longed for. And now there is an awakening of the memory or of the future prognostication that her tread is going to come. That awakes. What Sri Aurobindo would call the future memory awakes, and they are thrilled and filled with flickering crests and praying tongues. The subconscious caves, now that they are alight, now that they are thrilled, they are filled with glowing crests coming up and down and praying tongues. The flames look like tongues which are praying. What about the body? Even lost in slumber, mute, inanimate, her very body, his very body, answered to her power. Normally, the body is asleep, in slumber, mute, dumb, inanimate, lifeless. But now, even that responds to the pressure of her power. The one he worshipped was within him now. Mark, within him, we are apt to imagine that she is somewhere there and this man is praying like this. I have seen some paintings. But it is not that, you see. The one he worshipped was within him now. He is so much identified. He has lost his sense of individuality. And his body, his veins, his nerves, his life, his mind, they are all astir. And in that, she whom he has worshipped is within him. He awakes to her presence, to her descent and her presence within his being. Flame pure, ethereal dressed, her hair like ethereal, flowing, a mighty face, a face which exudes mightiness, power, appeared, and lips moved by immortal words. Her lips move when immortal words are spelt out. If that is the state of her lips, lids, the eyelids, wisdom's leaves, they are not just eyelids, but they are like leaves of wisdom, drooped over rapture's orbs. Her inside orbs are full of rapture, and these lids, wisdom's leaves, drooped over them, protected them, covered them. And about her forehead, her face is mighty, her lips are moved by immortal words, and lids cover the orbs of rapture. And her forehead, a marble monument of ponderings, contemplations. Always there is a deep thought, a deep contemplation, and unmoved, white, pure, that forehead, like a marble monument, shone, sight crypt, that is, it is the base of sight. From there issues her vision, and large like ocean's gaze, her forehead is large, like the gaze of an ocean which has no boundaries. Towards heaven, this applies to the next. A forehead side script now, and large like ocean's gaze towards heaven, two tranquil eyes of boundless thought. Now he describes the eyes. They are tranquil, unperturbed, of boundless thought. Behind them there is a boundless thought. And like the ocean's gaze towards heaven, these two tranquil eyes looked into man, looked into the eyes of man, and saw the God to come. They looked into the eyes of man, who is a representative of humanity, and saw that God is to reveal himself. God is to emerge in man, a shape was seen on threshold mind, on the threshold of his mind, not outside, but inside. A shape was seen on that threshold, and a voice, absolute and wise, imperative, full of wisdom, in the heart's chamber spoke. The Divine Mother's voice speaks in the chamber of his heart. and she whom he has worshipped is within him. And he hears that voice, O son of strength, who climbs creation's peaks, it is he has climbed the peaks. No soul is thy companion in the light, you are alone. Nobody is there to partner you, to support you, to help you. You have come all alone to the peaks of creation. O son of strength, who climbest creation's peaks, no soul is thy companion in the light. Alone thou standest at the eternal doors. What thou hast won is thine, but ask no more. She tells him, you have come, you have done all this valiant effort by yourself, you have come alone, and you have got something now. You have won. It belongs to you. Keep it. But do not ask for more. What you have won, it belongs to you. But do not ask for more, because she knows that he is going to ask that for everybody else. So she says, but ask no more. O spirit, aspiring in an ignorant frame, body, mind and life, O voice, arisen from the inconscient world, that is, however high he has come, the dregs of the inconscient, the roots of the inconscient are there. How shalt thou speak for men whose hearts are dumb? You want things for humanity. But there are all these men, their hearts are dumb. They do not speak your language. How shalt thou speak for men whose hearts are dumb? Make purblind earth the soul's seer vision's foam. The earth is so blind and more blind. How can that earth become the home of a seer vision, a vision that sees ahead? Oh, lighten the burden of the senseless globe. How do you hope to lighten the burden that is carried by this globe which is senseless? It is turning round and round in its round of ignorance. I am the mystery beyond reach of mind. I am the goal of the travail of the suns. My fire and sweetness are the cause of life. Fire and sweetness, contradictory things for us. Where there is fire, there can't be sweetness. And where there is sweetness, there can't be fire. But with the divine, my fire and sweetness, they go together, are the cause of life. But with all that, she says, but too immense my danger and my joy. An impure being will break, cannot bear. That is why she says, but too immense my danger. My might, my power cannot be sustained by these weaklings. But too immense my danger and my joy. Awake not the immeasurable descent. The descent of my power, do not call for it. It is there in its my power, my consciousness, my supreme force is in trance. He says, don't awaken it. Speak not my secret name to hostile time. Name, this is a very important line. Secret name, name of a god, name of a deity, name of the divine, is a key of the power, the quality that are embodied in that form. So when that name is uttered, all that power, all that qualitative consciousness is evoked. And that is why the seers keep this name secret, give it only to those who are ready, who have been initiated, who have purified themselves. So she says. And particularly they guard it from time, hostile time, the asura. Time consumes the divine manifestation, so he says. Speak not my secret name to hostile time. He has known her name. That is why she says, do not speak of it. Man is too weak to bear the infinite's weight. As yet, man is too weak to bear, to hold the weight of the infinite. Here is another important sentence. Truth born too soon might break the imperfect earth. The earth is imperfect still. And if this truth manifests before the time is ready, it might break the imperfect earth. So don't be impatient. Leave the all-seeing power to hew its way. You do not hasten it. You do not try to precipitate its descent. Let the all-seeing power, the higher nature, cut its way slowly, patiently, laboriously. It knows the time when things will be ready and when things can be manifested. Leave the all-seeing power to hew its way. In thy single vast achievement reign a power. You have achieved much. Singly, keep that for yourself and reign apart. Like a king that you are, you stand aside and reign. Helping the world with thy great lonely days. She doesn't ask him to be self-contained, but she says you can help the world by being what you are, but don't try to pull down that truth to the imperfect earth. In thy single vast achievement, reign apart, helping the world with thy great lonely days. I ask thee not to merge thy heart of flame in the immobile's wide and caring bliss. Thy heart of flame, intense aspiration, do not merge it in the bliss of the immobile, unmoving, uncaring. It doesn't care whether anybody merges in it or not. Don't do that. Turn from the fruitless motion of the ears. Don't turn away from the apparently fruitless movement of the ears. Deserting the fierce labor of the worlds, aloof from beings, lost in the alone. She asks him not to pull down. She asks him to keep his achievement to himself, but then she warns, don't turn away from the world. Help the world with thy great lonely days. Don't merge your heart of flame in that bliss. Don't turn away from the motion of time. Don't desert all the fierce labor. Aloof from beings, lost in the alone, how shall thy mighty spirit brook repose? How can thy mighty spirit, it is not an ordinary spirit, caring for its own salvation, How can it brook repose? How can it bear rest while death is still unconquered on the earth? Death still is not conquered. How can you rest? And time a field of suffering and pain? And time is still a field dominated by suffering and pain. Don't do that, she says, because thy soul was born to share the laden force, the cosmic force that is at work, laden with the intention, charged with the intention. The labor of that force is to be shared by thy soul. Obey thy nature and fulfill thy fate. Accept the difficulty and godlike toil for the slow-paced, omniscient purpose. Live. Spend your life, live for that purpose which is omniscient, knows all, but it is slow-paced. You have to have patience and march along with the steps of nature on the roads of time. She says, the enigma knot is tied in humankind. The problem, the paradox of spirit and matter, of time and the eternal, of the finite and the infinite, is to be found in the humankind. Man, the human being, he bears the solution to the problem. That knot is living and ready for being untied and resolved in the humankind. And thou art a specimen of the humankind.